Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Samach Tes. We will begin on Daf Samach Ches Amud Beis, 15 lines from the bottom. Amar Rav Huna Amar Rabbi Tanosa, this that a father gives a daughter a dowry, and a Tanai Ksuba. Doesn't have all the halachas of the Tanai Ksuba, of the various stipulations of the Ksuba. Ask the Gemara, what does Rav Huna mean? My Enik Tanai Ksuba. What does Rav Huna mean when he says that doesn't have the same halachas? Inema, perhaps what you'll say it means. Dila panosa tafim mishabdi. Panosa we could collect from properties that were sold by the brothers. And Rashi and Tosfos help us understand the Gemara. They help us understand every Gemara. The way they explain the Gemara is as follows. Certainly if a father, before he passed away, sold properties that he owned, and then the sons inherit, and there are daughters that deserve a dowry, they can't collect that from what he sold while he was alive. Here the Gemara is referring, say, the Rishonim, to a situation where the father died, left over properties, and then the sons went and sold it, and that property was already mortgaged, so to speak, to the Ksuba. And what the Gemara is telling us now is, Parnosa, the girl's rights to the Nadin, Tafim Mishabdi, the Tanai Ksuba, Loi Tafim Mishabdi. The Tanai Ksuba, that means the Mazonos that the girls and the Almana get from the estate supported, that we don't collect from the Chasam Shabbatim. What's the difference? So I saw two approaches in the Rishonim. One approach in the Rishonim is really a nice chazara of what we've been learning, is the obligation for a father to marry off a daughter is a lot greater than the obligation to support. As we learned, the support is only till 6 years old, and afterwards it's considered only tzedakah b'chaleis, somebody doing something charitable. On the other hand, giving a dowry is an obligation. So that's why there's more of an obligation from the estate to give the dowry versus giving the support. That's one pshat. But another pshat, which is really the pshat that most Rishonim follow, is that there's a fundamental difference between the dowry and support. And it really speaks to the basic issue of Mishubadim. When one sells Mishubadim, if I sell property and there's a lien on that property, so you, who purchased the property from me and do a title search, should be aware that there's a lien on my property. And if you still enter the transaction, it's at your own risk. But when you do that research, you know exactly what's involved. You know that I have a mortgage of $100,000. So you know that you have risk that you may lose $100,000 by purchasing this property that's already mortgaged. But let's say it's a loan that's not clear how much I own. That's not open to those halachas. So the Nadin, as we've been discussing for the last two shiurim, has a fixed sum, 10% of the value of the estate. So somebody who's doing research knows that these properties that the sons inherited have on them the following obligation. Mezainis is not a number that we can know, because mezainis could be, it depends on how long the girls will not be married. It depends how long the wife will live. It depends if the almana gets remarried. There's so many unknown variables, and therefore, whenever it's not a clear number, mishubadim never become responsible. In fact, the Rishonim and Mefarshim want to bring a raya. Yesterday we quoted a machloikus Rashi and Tosfos. According to Tosfos, even though we learned that the halach is like Rebbe, that we do estimate the value of the estate, but that only is up to a cap of 10%. According to Rashi, there's no 10% cap. We evaluate what the father would have done. Say to Rishonim, from here we see, it was saying the difference between Parnassah and Mezainis is that Parnassah is very clearly identifiable and Mezainis is not. So according to Tosfos, we know there's a cap of 10%. But according to Rashi, there's no clear number. So why are we considering Parnassah a clear number, according to Rashi? So Mefarshim explained that although every person, it's a different number, but it's a number that we could clearly identify. Bezdin will make an assessment, Bezdin will make an evaluation, and that's the number. Mezainis is a number that nobody could come up with, because as we described, there's so many variables. So that's why the Gemara says, the difference is Parnasa, gold can be collected from the Mushvadim, Mezainis cannot. I saw interesting Machloikus Rishonim. Our Gemara is saying that the Parnasa, the obligation of the father's estate to pay for the Nadin, remains under all circumstances. Let's say the mother, the girl's mother, also has money. We've discussed many times, she has Nechsim Melug, she has the Fitzoyim Basel, she gets a Yerusha. Is the mother also responsible to pay towards the dowry of her daughters? So it's actually a Machloikis, Maril, and the Maram Rattenberg. The Maril says that she's not responsible, and she says, and he brings a proof from Al Gemara. Because Al Gemara says the difference between Mezainis and Parnasa is that Parnasa continues from Mishabadim and Mezainis doesn't. If there would be Halacha that Parnasa comes from the mother and Mezainis doesn't, Al Gemara should have said that very strong difference. So it's a proof that the mother is never responsible. The Ram Rattenberg disagrees with the Maril. And he says, I, the Maril's Raya from Al Gemara. He says, Al Gemara is focusing on the father. It's not, talking about the Ksuba, we're not focused on the mother. The Rama brings down both opinions without being Machriya. The Gra paskins like the Maril that the mother does not have to contribute to the dowry of the daughters. Ask the Gemara, so now we're saying that this is what Rav Huna meant, that Mezainis we can't take from Mishabadim, Panos we can. Ask the Gemara, Maika Mashmon, this is the way Tosfos explains the Gemara. Is that what Rav Huna came to teach us? Hamaisa b'chol yoyim. This is something that we know. So like Tosfos says, Rav Huna came to teach us something new. Something that everybody knows every day is not considered new. And not considered something that we need Rav Huna to teach us. Because Allah is, Maitzin le'panos ve'im maitzin le'mezainis. Ella, says the Gemara, what he meant to say is, panosa gavyanami metatli. Panosa not only are the karka, the real estate of the father taken from, but even the metatlin. But tonight, suba, mimakarka gavya, metatloi gavya. Only from karka, not from metatlin. However, Rebbe disagrees, and he says, idi vi idi migva gavya. Both the panosa and mezainis are taken from metatlin. The Tanya, as the Brisa says, echad nechasim sheyesh lemachrayis, vechad nechasim shein lemachrayis, karka and metatlin, matzian lemazon isha lebanois, divrei Rebbe. Ask the Gemara, if according to Rebbe, both Parnasa and Mezainis are taken both from karka and metatlin, we're back to where we started. What did the Rav Huna mean when he says, enek tnaik suba, el mai, the Parnasa, what did Rav Huna mean when we began today's shir, making a statement that Parnasa enek tnaik suba? Says the Gemara l'chatanya, to teach us the following halacha. Hoimer, if somebody says, if a father says, before he passes away, he gives a tzavah, I don't want my estate to support my daughters and Shemila. He doesn't have the ability to say that. On the other hand, if he says, that they shouldn't get a dowry, Shemila. And the explanation is quite simple. When a man gets married, he signs a ksuba. And as we've been learning, the ksuba is very clear that he takes responsibility that when he leaves the world, if he has daughters who are ktanois, he has a wife, his estate will support them. He can't change his mind. A deal's a deal. On the other hand, he never officially or legally obligated himself to give his daughters a dowry. So as important as we said earlier it is, he never obligated himself, and if he wants to say that he should, that his estate shouldn't be responsible, he has the right to say that. Says the Gemara, Tolei Rav l'Rebbe b'Nechiti. Rav sent a letter to Rebbe, and he asked a question between the lines. And there's a machloikis, why did he write it between the lines? Between the mefarshim. One pshat is, very simple pshat. He wrote a letter, and then he remembered, you know, I have this question that I want to ask Rebbe, but the letter was full. So in between the lines, he wrote in the question. Another pshat is, that in the time of Rav and Rebbe, it was before Torah Shabbat Peh was allowed to be written. So he had a question in learning, Torah Shabbat Peh, but he can't write it. So he only wrote it, you know, as a small little mark in between the lines. That's not called writing Torah Shabbat Peh. And actually, the poskim, it's Maram Shif's Pshat. And actually, the Paiskim used this Lahaloch Lamaisa. There's a very big discussion amongst the Paiskim. If one writes a social letter, is he allowed to include in it Divrei Torah? Many Paiskim say that you're not allowed to include it, because a social letter is very likely, after I read the letter, I'll throw it out. So that's why people, there are many Paiskim that suggest that if you write Divrei Torah, you have to write it on a separate piece of paper. And that's the proof from this Gemara. Only here, where Torah Shabbat Peh wasn't allowed to be written, did they have to write it in the middle of the letter. But normally, it should be kept as a separate letter. So he asked the question, Ha'achen sheshibdu mahu? If brothers have their property that they inherited, they sold, what is the halacha? Yosef Ravchi Kamei, Amalei Machru Ameshkenu. The Gemara, the letter used a very ambiguous word, Shibdu. So he says, what does Shibdu mean? Does it mean that they sold the properties, Machru or Mishkenu? Mishkenu in Shas generally means, Mishkenu we know means putting up for collateral, for security. Here it really means somewhat different. That if somebody borrows money for someone else, they used to put up collateral, but it wasn't a collateral just that if I can't pay, you could foreclose on the collateral. What it meant was that the Malva could use the Mashkoin for a certain amount of years. So if the brothers gave up that property, they sold it, or they gave it up as a pledge, the property that they inherited, could the daughters collect their parnasa from it? Amalei. So they asked them, my nafkamina ben mechro ben shemishkino betzien leparnasa. The halacha is for the nadin we take from the mishabadim, ben betzien lemezonos, but we don't take for support. The Rav, according to Rav, asked the Gemara, we need to understand what Rav did. Rav wrote, if he was speaking about a case where the brothers sold the property, he should have asked the Shaila, what is the din if they sold it? And if his question was in a situation where the property was given up as a pledge, why did Rav write this ambiguous word of Shibdu? Answers the Gemara, Rav was very smart. We know Rav was very smart. But Rav Tavayakum Abayle, Rav really wanted to know the halacha under both circumstances. And therefore, for sovereign, he made the following calculation. If I would have written the shailas, what happens if the brothers sold it? Honicha, and if I would receive a response, Ishalachli the Metzian, that even if the brothers sold the property, the daughters have a right for their panasa needs, which means dowry, to take these properties, I will understand Kolshke Mishkenu, that certainly if they only gave it up as a pledge, the girls have a right to take it. Because let's think about it for a moment. Where does the receiver of the property have more of a hand on the property? When it was sold to him, or was given to him as a pledge? When it was sold to him. So if it was even sold to him, the daughters could take it. Certainly if it was given up as a pledge, they could take it. However, Rav said, what will be the halacha? What will be Ishalachli if the response I will receive is Emetzin, that the daughters have no right? So Kati, Mishkenu Kamei, by the way, I won't have a clear answer. I'll know that if the brothers sold it, the daughters can't take it, but that won't give me an answer what happens if the brothers only put it up for pledge. Similarly, Iksiv Nilei Mishkenai, if I'll only ask the question if the brothers put it up for pledge, Ishalachli, if I'll receive a response, the Emetzin, that even under those circumstances, the daughters can't take it. So I'll say, if it was given up as pledge, the daughters can't take it. Kolshkein, if it was sold, Machroi, they can't take it. However, Ishalachli, if the response will be, Metzin, that the daughters can take it, I'll still not have a clear response. Because Akati, I'll say yes. If it was only given up as a pledge, that's so the receiver never got his complete ownership of it. That's why the daughters can take it. But a mechray, if it was sold, I don't know what the halach would be. That's why Rav said, echtavloi, I'll specifically write a word of shibdu, which is ambiguous, the mashmahachi and mashmahachi. It includes both the situation of machro and both the situation of mishkenu. And therefore, when I'll get an answer, I'll be able to know the din under all circumstances. So the Pnei Yeshua makes an observation. This sugya of Meshubadim, what the halach is about Meshubadim, is a very, very common sugya throughout Shas. Yet this is the only place, says the Pnei Yeshua, we've seen that the Gemara starts analyzing what does Mushabada mean? Machru or Mishkanu. Why don't we find it in all the other places that we have this discussion? So he answers, where do we normally have the situation of a Nechasim of Mishabadim? Where I, as we spoke about earlier, where I'm buying a property from you, and you have a loan. And there is a difference between Nechasim and Mishabadim, that there I should have done research, I should have done proper research before I bought the property, and where it's a Milvah Peh, where there's no way of me knowing about the loan. And the difference between a Milvah B'Ksav and Milvah Peh doesn't make a difference if it's Michru or Mishkanu. A Milvah B'Ksav I should have done the research. A Milvah Peh couldn't do the research. So the Gemara never goes into the difference. Here, however, where it's talking about the daughter's rights, there, as the Gemara just very beautifully explained the difference between Michru and Mishkanu, it was important to make this distinction and see is there indeed a distinction in Halach or not. The Gemara says actually there is no distinction. Rav Yochanan says, Echad zeh v'echad zeh, both Panosa and Mezoinus Eimetzian, we don't take from Nechasim Mishabadim. Ibailuhu. So now the Gemara asked a very interesting shaila. Rabbi Yochanan is disagreeing with Rebbe. Rebbe says that both Mezoinus and Panosa we take from Nechasim Mishabadim. Rabbi Yochanan is disagreeing. So the Gemara's question is, how do we look at Rabbi Yochanan's opinion? Is Pshat lo shmile the Rebbe? He never heard Rebbe's opinion. Vishmile, had he heard Rebbe's opinion, have Mekabele, he certainly would have accepted it. Oidoma Shmile v'loy Mekabele, he heard it and he disagreed. So the very fundamental shaila. Rabbi Yochanan's an Amira. Rebbe's a Tana. So how could the Gemara say that if Rabbi Yochanan knew about it and disagreed, how could an Amira disagree with a Tana? So most Rishonim, the Rajba, most Rishonim say, what the Gemara means to say is that Rabbi Yochanan, obviously, if he disagreed with Rebbe, had a Braisa or a Mishnah corroborating his position. That's how most Rishonim learn. But then I saw from Rabbi Chanan, says a very big chiddush. He says in the name of Rabbeinu Yoina. He says, we, from when we begin learning Gemara, know that one of the basic rules are that an Amira cannot disagree with a Tana. He says, that's not always the case. He says, the Amira cannot argue with a Tana only when the Tana is quoted in a Mishnah or a Braisa. So an Amira doesn't have the right to argue with a Mishnah Braisa unless he has his own Mishnah Braisa to back his view. But in a situation where a Tana is just saying an opinion without a Mishnah or a Braisa backing him up, then an Amira is allowed to argue on a Tana. Rebbe was not being quoted in a Mishnah or a Braisa here. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan, the Amira, would be allowed to argue with him. Then there's a fascinating Marik on this Gemara. The Marik discusses, we know that one of the klolim in Hayra, in Paskening, not nowadays, this goes back to the times of the Rishonim and the Tanoim and the Amoraim, is Hilchos Kebasroi. We always follow the latter opinion. Why? Why do we follow the latter opinion? Weren't the earlier generations greater than the later generations? So the answer is, because the later generations, the later Paiskim, later Manda Omrim, saw what the earlier opinions said, and therefore were able to take those opinions into consideration. And then if they disagree, that means that they knew that those opinions are wrong. The earlier opinions weren't aware of what the later ones said. Says the Marik, that's what this Gemara is all about. He quotes Rabbi Erev Haigoy. He says as follows, it's very important for the Gemara to know if Rabbi Yochanan was aware of what Rebbe said or not. Because Rabbi Yochanan obviously was much later than Rebbe. As we just said, Rabbi Yochanan was an Amira, Rebbe was a Tana. If Rabbi Yochanan was aware of what Rebbe said and still disagreed, what does that mean? That means that he was the Basroi, who was aware of the earlier opinion and still recognized that that was the incorrect opinion. But if, on the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan lo shmilei was not aware in the first place what Rebbe said, so then we can't follow what Rabbi Yochanan said, because it could well be that if Rabbi Yochanan was aware what Rebbe said, he wouldn't have disagreed. Fascinating, Maria. So now the Gemara wants to know, did Rabbi Yochanan know or not know? Tashma, as says the Gemara, we learned the following Gemara. Mishmeis, a father passes away, v'niach shtei bonus uben, and he leaves over two daughters and a son. V'kadma rishayin v'notle is nechasim. The first daughter, Baruch Hashem, gets married. She takes 10% for her natan. And then the son dies. Son dies without any children. So who now take this estate? The two daughters. Amr Rabbi Yochanan makes Rabbi Yochanan the following statement. Shni Avitra. Now when the second daughter gets married, so let's think through the options. The second daughter says, now we're the two people that are getting the whole Yerusha. But the second daughter says to the first daughter, before we divide the Yerusha, I want my Nadin. And then we'll divide the rest. Says Rabbi Yochanan, no. The second daughter gives up her rights. Gives up her rights and she doesn't get her portion first. The Rishonim say, this everybody agrees to, that let's say we'll have the following situation, a simple situation. A father has two daughters. He married off his first daughter while he was alive, Baruch Hashem, gave her Nadin. And then he dies. And these two daughters are his Yarshim. He has no sons. Could the second daughter say, I want to take off the top my Nadin? Certainly she may not. Because what the father did while he was alive has nothing to do with what happens after he dies. Here we're dealing with a situation, however, where the daughters, this first daughter got after the father died, and then the second daughter says, my portion, my Nadin, should not be considered part of the Yerusha. Amr Rav Chanina, Amr Rav Yochanan, Shnei Vitra, she doesn't get the portion. Amr Rav Chanina, and Rav Chanina explains, Gedulazum Amru, Metzin Lepanoso Vat Me Metzin Lemezoinis. The Chanina asks of Yochanan, I don't understand your ruling. If the halach is we could go to Meshubadim, somebody who the brothers sold the property, fair and square, the girls could go for Nadin, so can't she go to her sister? So now the Gemara analyzes. Vim Isa, now if Rabbi Yochanan never heard this opinion, namely man Amra, he should have said, that's not true, she can't go to the Meshubadim. It must be that Rabbi Yochanan was aware of the opinion and disagreed. Says the Gemara, V'dilma, Loilam Loishmile. It could be he wasn't aware of it. The Chishmile, had he heard Rebbe's opinion that you can't go to the, had he heard Rebbe's opinion that you can go to the Mishmadim, he would have agreed. The Chishmile Kabul, the Shani Hassam, there it's different. Why it's different? The Ikarevach Pesa. What's the whole purpose? Interesting pshat. What's the whole reason the girl gets a Nadin? Because she needs to get married, and a dowry is a crucial element in getting married. But this girl is a big Yairish. She's inheriting the estate. So we don't have to give her Nadin. She has enough money without it. Ask the Gemara, Amale Rav Yemele Rav Ashi, Elam Ato, if you're going to follow that line of reasoning, Ashkecha Metziba Alma. What will be, back to our case, where there are only two sisters? A simple situation. There are only two sisters. Or there's a brother, let's say a different case, where there's a brother, and each girl deserves her Nadin. And this girl wins the lottery. Ask Chamtzi Balma, she wins the lottery. Dikka Rav Chabesa. So she has plenty of money to get married off with. Hachanami de lo yavina lo yasin achasim. Will we deprive her of the Nadin she deserves? Amalei. So he said, what kind of question is that? Anor Rav Chabesa mahanin nixikamina. This girl is getting money from this estate. So what's the difference if she gets it as 10%? Or what's the difference if she gets it as Yerusha? She has money that her father left to marry off. The Metziah has nothing to do with the father. Amar Abaya. So Abaya says, Bas Yerushas Hava. A daughter's right to the 10% is as a Yerush. Amar Rav Ashi L'Ravayma. Ask Rav Ashi. Amar Lai. Anar Rav Abayas Mahani Nechza Kamina. That's what we said. Amar Meima, Bas Yerushas Hava. A daughter is a Yerushas. Amar Rav Ashi L'Meima. What does that mean? Ibra Usluki Bezuzi. Midaraisa, a Yerush has a right to get his share and everything the father left. So if the girl is a Yerush, so she could say, I want to get my 10%, a little piece from everything the father left. If on the other hand, she's not a Yerush, the son has to give it a 10% value, however he sees fit. If the son wants to give a cash, that he can't because she's a Yairish, I'm like, yeah. Ask the Gemara another question. According to your statement that she's a Yireshis, Let's say the son wanted to say, the father left over a number of pieces of real estate. I'll give you one piece of real estate. That one piece of real estate equals a 10%, and that's all you could take. She could say, I'm a Yorish. I want 10% of every piece of real estate. I'm like, you're right. Ravashi disagrees. The son, the daughter has a claim, but not that she's a Yorish. And says the Gemara of Af Amemer Hadabay. And Amemer also we see retracted from this position that a Das is a Yorish. Have a Ka'imna Kamei Da Amemer. I was once standing by Amemer. For us, there was a woman that came. And she asked for her 10%, her panasa. And I saw that his opinion was that if the Yorish just wanted to give her cash, have a misalkalay. He could have done that. So it's a proof she's not a Yorishus. How is the proof? The Shami Ma'achi, I heard the brother telling her that a Kamerla, Ia Havalon Zuzi, if I had the cash, Salukna Bazuzi, I'd give you cash, and you have no right to any of the properties. Vishtik, and a name was sitting, listening to the brother say this to the sister, sat there quietly, V'layam Aloy Midi, and didn't say anything. So we see that she is only a Balas Chayv, and she has no right to 10% of everything. So this Gemara, as Tosfos tells us, is a fascinating Gemara. He says, if a Dayan is sitting by a Din Torah, and he hears one side saying something to the other side, which is halachically incorrect, he has to say, you're wrong. Because the Gemara is proving from the fact that Amemah didn't say anything, that must be the halacha. And that's the Din. And the Rishonim give a number of reasons. One reason is, because if the Dayan won't say anything, people will think that that's indeed the Din, and make the mistake. Another reason the Rishonim say is because if I am in a Din Torah with you and I say something which is a very strong taina, it confuses you. It puts you at a weak stand. So the Dayan has an obligation to say, don't get nervous. What he's saying doesn't make sense halachically. Or another pshat, a very simple pshat, a Dayan can't sit by and listen to something that's incorrect. The Pesachei Tshuva, this halach is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that a Dayan who's sitting by the Din Torah that hears another party saying something that's incorrect, has to protest. But he makes a number of conditions. He says if the Dayan is anyway going to write a Psak Halacha, and included in that Psak Halacha will be that that Taina wasn't the Taina, he doesn't have to say it then, he could include it in his Psak. Another thing he says is if the Balei Din, the two litigants, are Talmidei Chachamim, and the other one knows what he's saying, doesn't have any halakhic validity, then the Dayan doesn't have to say anything. Also, he says that if it's obvious that the person who's saying this claim is only doing it for pasturing purposes, but he recognizes that the other side recognizes that there's really no halachic validity to it, the Dayan doesn't have to protest either. The Hashtad Amrit, so says now the Gemara that we established, that the girl's rights are not as a Yorish, but only as a Balas Chayv. Balas Chayv Hava. So now the question is, who is she a Bal Chayv of? Is she considered a Bal Chayv of the father, the Abba, the Acha? Ask the Gemara L'may Nafkamina. And so the Gemara L'migva Bein and the Shalai B'Shvua, V'Zeburus B'Shvua. The halacha is as follows. If somebody owes someone else money, then there are two dinim. When the person, if the father owes somebody money, the two dinim. One is when the person comes to collect the money, doesn't have to swear that you owe me the money. Secondly, the halach is that a Bal Choyv collects Beinonis, medium type of property. But let's say somebody's collecting from the estate, from the children of someone who passed away. There they can't collect without a Shvuah, one din, and they also only get Ziburius. They only get the weak property. So now it's a very big nafkamina. Is this daughter a claim against the father? The father's no longer, or is the claim against the sons? If the claim is against the father's not here. If the claim is against the sons are here. Toshma, the Ravina Agvil Abati the Ravashi, Ravina collected for the daughter of Ashi, Mima Berei the Ravashi Beinanis, Bishloi Bishvua, Berei the Ravsama, Berei the Ravashi, Zaburius Bishvua. So the Ritva explains the Gemara this way. Ravashi passed away. He had two sons, Ravsama and Mabar Ravashi. And then Rav Sama passed away. and there were daughters that came to collect their nadin. So from Mabar Rav Ashi, they collected Beinonis, and they didn't make a shvua. From Rav Sama's children, who weren't the people that she had a claim against, Shona had a claim against Rav Sama, their father, who passed away, they only got Ziburius, and they needed a shvua. So it's a raya that the claim is against the sons, not against the father. Mefarshim ask that the halacha is that why is the halacha that a Baal Chayv gets Beinonis? So the reason is, if I'm going to lend you money, and then I only can get you Ziburius, I'll never lend you money. But they ask, here we're not dealing with a loan, we're dealing with panasa. So Mefarshim answers simple terrors. Once Chazal established that a Baal Chayv gets Beinonis, it's always the case, even if the reason isn't applicable. Along the same lines, they ask, why is the halacha that a Baal Chayv has to make a shvua? This is a very interesting question. Why is the halacha Baal Chayv has to make a shvua? Because the sons don't know, perhaps the father did pay back. But what's the case here? The girl was a single girl when her father was alive. Then the father died, the brothers inherit, and Baruch Hashem, she becomes a kala, and she wants her dowry. So there's no shaila that she didn't collect, so why should she have to make a shvua? So Mefarshim answer, it's a father and a daughter. Sometimes the father is so interested in taking care of his daughter, she's not a kala. She may even be a young girl. But he already gives her the money for the nadin anyway. And that's why we have to be concerned that the father paid, and if the father is, if she's a Baal Chayv to the father, she has to make a shvua to the sons. Shalach le Reb Nechemi Breid Reb Yosel Rav Bar Afuna Zuta Min Ahadah Ki Asi Hayitas Al Kamach Ad Be Isin Nechassim. When this woman comes to collect her Isin Nechassim, take it afil mitz tabula. Its tabula is the base on which they put the mill. And as Mefarshim explained, what he was teaching him is that even though this is not really part of the ground, it's just a base that's put on the ground, it's considered karka. Amar Rav Ashi Kavina Be'er Rav Kahana, we were in Rav Kahana's yeshiva, HaMagbina Afilu Ma'amlo DeBeisi. Amlo DeBeisi means rent that they receive from properties. And Tosfos explains the Gemara this way. He says that rent that the father collected already, that's certainly Metatlin. Rent that is not yet due is certainly Karka. Tosfos explains the Gemara is thinking about the following situation. They typically rented an apartment or property for a year at a time. The rent is only due in middle of the year. At the end of the year, I'm sorry. And she's coming to ask for her share in middle of the year. And the Gemara is teaching us that that has a din like karka. Shalach le Rav Hanan Rav Huna. Rav Hanan sent the following message to Rav Huna. Huna chavrin. Huna our colleague. Shalom. Peace on you. And he said the following, when this woman comes to you, agba ismin chosim, collect for her 10% for the nadin. Have a yosar of sheshes kamei. And Rav Sheshes was sitting as this message arrived from Rav Hanan. Rav Huna was very disturbed with this message. Omle, zil emele, go tell him this, uvashamta yehei mandal oi omele. And if you won't, you'll be in chayram. He was very upset the way Rav Hanan addressed him. He said, Huna chavin. Other Rav Sheshel, Omele, Anan, Mekarki or Metatli. Does she collect from Karka Metatlin? Or Man Yesev Be Mazecha Beresha? Who sits, as we'll see, Be Mazecha means, who sits Bavelis at the head? What was he trying to say to him with this message about Avelis? What does Avelis come here? He was saying to him, the Mefarshim say, Tupshatim. One pshat he was saying to him was, as we're going to see, Rav Hanan didn't know what Marzeicha meant. He says, a person that doesn't know what Marzeicha means is calling me Huna. Another pshat is, an Avil sits at the head of the table, as we'll see. But not because he deserves any honor, it's because he's an Avil. He didn't do anything to get that honor. So he said to Hanan, you think you're a great person, and you're a Rav, and therefore you're addressing me as if I'm your friend. You're only the Rav because you're in that position, not that you deserve the position. You're like an oval. Also, Rav Sheshel came to Rav Hanan. So Rav Sheshel came to Rav Hanan. Amalei Mar Rabbi Rav Huna Rabbi. Amalei Mar Rabba. You're my Rebbe. Rav Huna Rabbi the Rebbe. And but Rav Huna is both is your Rebbe. The Shemuti Shamit, and he put into Chayrim, Man Deloy Amalei. Whoever won't repeat the message. Because the E Lab the Shamit, if not for the fact that I was standing under the threat of a Chayrim, Lo Ava Kamne. I would have never had the chutzpah to repeat these harsh words that Rav Huna sent you. And then you repeat what Rav Huna said. Anan anem makakim matatli, uman yosebe mazicha bereisha. Also Rav Anan lekamei de marukva. So Rav Anan then goes to marukva. Amalei chazi mar, and he complains to marukva. Heich shalach li Rav Huna, anan anan, void mazarcha de shalach li, this message about mazicha, I don't understand lo yedana mainiu, I don't even understand what he means. So the Chofetz Chaim asks, how is Rav Anan allowed to go to Mar Ukva to repeat the story? Isn't it Lashon Hara? According to Rav Anan, Rav Huna embarrassed him. So how could he repeat? So Chofetz Chaim says that certainly, as far as Hilchos Lashon Hara is concerned, he's not allowed to repeat. Here, Rav Anan only went because he had a Shaila. So if I have a Shaila, that, and I go to Rav to ask, what am I supposed to do? And by asking my Shaila, I have to say Lashon Hara. That's not considered Lashon Hara. Here, Rav Anan didn't know what to do. That's why he was allowed to say it to Bar Okfa. Otherwise, he would not be allowed to repeat it. Amalei easy gufad avda hechahava. So Rav Marukfa asks Rav Anan, what happened here? Amalei hachi v'hachi hava, masa. He said, this was what happened. Amalei gavad lo yada mainir mazicha. What do you call it? Somebody who doesn't know what mazicha. Sholach lei Rav Huna chavrin, you call him your colleague. Rav Huna was right. So now ask the Gemara, as we already gave the hint. My mazicha, what does mazicha mean? Ovo. The ksiv koyam Hashem al tova beis marzach. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Yirmiyah there will be so much avelus in Klal Yisrael, it will be such a commonplace thing that there's no, that you won't go be menachem ovo because it will be so often. Amravu, menayin la'ovel shemes b'roish, hadanu la'ovel sits at the head of the table, shenem efcha darkem ve'eshkin roish, ve'eshkin kemelech begdud, kasher avelim yinachim. Ask the Gemara, yinachim acherim mashma. It doesn't mean that the ovel, it's mashma the people who come to console the avelim. Amram nachma yitzchok, yinuchim ksiv. The way to read the pasuk is, the one who is consoled sits at the head of the table. As Mefarshim go into great length in explaining, we unfortunately don't have the time, that in their world, the place that you sat at the table had a lot of meaning, and the Avelim sat at the head of the table. Mazutra Amar Mahacha, Vesar Mazach Seruchim, Mar Vesach, somebody who's bitter, Nasa Sal Seruchim, becomes the head. The Oval, who's never bitter, sits at the head of the table. And actually, I sort of Paiskum say that this halacha has somewhat relevance b'zmaneinu. Because the halacha is that if somebody is an Avil Rachman Atzlan, he is the one that leads the Zimun the entire year of Avelis. Why? Because the Avil is Mesa Barash. Amar Rava, says Rava halacha, Hilchasim m'karki v'leim m'tatli, the Mezoinus is only collected from karka, not from m'tatlin. Hilchasim m'karki m'tatli, b'leim m'zoinim, b'leim k'suba, b'leim panosa. Everything only comes from karka. However, all the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch say that b'zmaneinu it goes from m'tatlin. But there's a fundamental machloikus Rosh and Taisus why. Rosh says that that's part of, we quoted this takonas agoinim, there's a takonas agoinim that everything is collected from m'tatlin. Taisus says it works with a very different lumdus. Taisus says that just like we said in the previous year, that a girl gets panosa because we base on what we assume the father would have given. Similarly, nowadays people use cash, so we assume that the father would have given cash to pay the dowry. What's the nafkamina between Taisus and the Rosh? Let's say we're giving the girl the dowry, not because we're assessing what the father would have done. We spoke in the previous year that we have no way of evaluating. We just give a 10%. According to the Rosh, that it's a takanas goyim, she still gets a 10%. According to the, from the, she gets a 10% from a talpman. According to Taisus, since not based on the assessment, she only can get it from karka, not from a talpman. Says the Mishnah, Hamash l'shmaos l'bitoy. If somebody gives money to an administrator, he's dying and he gives the money over to the administrator, V'yomer, and she says, I want you to buy property. V'yomeris, neminal bali olai, and she says, no, don't buy property, give the cash to my husband. As we'll see in the Gemara, it's only erisin. Give the money to my husband, he'll take care of it. He has to do what the father said. And as we're going to learn in the Gemara, because Rameya holds mitzvah l'kayim devrei meis. This is what he was, that was the job he was given, he has to follow it. Rabbi Yosheimer, v'chi enel soda, v'yroitz l'machra. If he bought the field, she could sell it. That's why, harei hi mechur me'achshav. She could sell it, and he doesn't have to, he could give her the money, and he doesn't have to buy the property. However, says Rabbi Yossi, v'medvar memurim, when was this said? B'gdoila. If the girl is a gdoila. Ava b'ktana, but if the girl's only a ktana, a mas a ktana klum, and he has to buy the property. Why does Rabbi Yossi disagree with Rameya? So there's two explanations in the Rishonim. One is because the Mishnah really gives us the reason, because he says, what's the point? She'll sell it anyway. Or, could be, some Rishonim suggest, that Rabbi Yossi doesn't accept what Rameya says, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. There is Tana Rabban, hamas l'maris l'chasnoi, if somebody leaves more money over for his son-in-law, likach mem sada l'bitoi, and he says to this administrator, I want you to buy property for my daughter, v'yemaris, and she says, yinosnu l'bali, so Allah is min nesuin, if they already had nesuin, darach is rishus b'yadoi, she could tell the administrator to give my husband the cash, and he'll do what he has to do with it. Min erisin, yaso shlish mash rishus b'yadoi, if there's only erisin, then he has to follow the father's instructions. And the Rishonim explain, what's the difference between Erisin and Nesuin? The Rishonim explain that by Erisin, the father is not convinced that this marriage will be consummated to Nesuin. And that's why he's uncomfortable in getting in letting the husband put his money hands on the money. However, once they come to Nesuin, there he's already comfortable that it's going, there's a marriage that's going to succeed. Or as the Rishonim say, Nesuin, she goes into his Rishos, and that's why he could do with it whatever he wants. Rabbi Yossi makes a different distinction. Hagdoila, if she's a gdoila, beimin and asun, beimin and erisin, harishos biyada. And ktana, beimin and asun, beimin and erisin, if she's only ktana, yasa shlish mashoshos biyada, the administrator has to follow instructions. Ask him, my benayu, exactly what is the point of machloikis between Rameh and Rabbi Yossi? Ilema, perhaps you could say, ktana min asunik benayu. There is nasun, but the girl is only a ktana. The Ramei is going to hold Harshus Piyada, because she's already Nasri. Vasa Rabbi Yossi Lameimer, and Rabbi Yossi is being Machmer, and he's saying that even though Afilamin and Asuin, Nami, Gedoyla in, Ktana Loi. Ask the Gemara, Ema Seifa, let's continue the Mishnah. Ab Ktana, Emas Ktana Klub. Now the question is, who made this statement? Hama Ktana Loi. Elaim Rabbi Yossi, if you're going to say it's Rabbi Yossi making the statement, we already know Rabbi Yossi holds this way. Don Rabbi Yossi, v'chi ena el soda, v'hi roitz l'machari, hi mechur ma'achshav, she has a right to sell the field. Now, who could sell a field? Gedoyla, the Basvina. She could sell the field in Ktana, but Ktana d'lach Basvina hi loy. So why, we obviously understand that Rabbi Yossi is only speaking to a Gedoyla, not to Ktana. Because Rabbi Yossi's whole argument is that she can anyway sell the field. But only Gedoyla has the right to sell, not a Ktana. Ella, it must be Rameya making the statement. Rameya said that the administrator has to follow the instructions. On that says Rameya to qualify. When does the administrator have to follow instruction if there's only Erisin? If there's Nesuin, Harishas Biyadai. And furthermore, even if there were Nesuin, doesn't mean that the administrator can leave it with the husband. It's only b'medvar memurim b'gdoila. Avoktana emasik tana kfum. Says the Gemara, so it comes out. El gdoila me eris nikvenayu. That means like this. According to Rameya, a gdoila me erisin cannot sell the property. The administrator has to follow the instructions. According to Rabbi Yossi, if a gdoila me erisin chinses a gdoila, he doesn't have to follow the instructions. A ktana min erisin, everybody will agree, the administrator has to follow. And a gedoyla min nesua, everybody will agree that he doesn't have to follow. Etma, Rav Yehuda Mishmu, halach Rav Yossi, Rav Amar Rav Nachman, halach Rameya.